Previously on the Crafty Beer Girls podcast.
So anyway, I live in Sandy and there's not very many places to drink. There's a bar named Sue and it's kind of a dive bar. They have some good beer, but it's kind of a dive bar. But we're so excited that we have Slackwater now. We went to the soft opening. Guess what my pizza was called?
Tastes like burning.
That's what it was called, literally.
Why?
Tastes like burning. Because it tasted like burning. It was burning.
Is that what? Something you want?
Fuck yeah.
What's that mean? Oh.
It was jalapenos like and like different peppers.
Oh.
And
oh. It
was,
oh, that makes a lot
well,
more sense.
Well, jalapenos, that's one thing. Is it ghost peppers it, or something? I felt that. Continuing on.
Jenny's getting
it had jalapeno. I'm just.
I think we're freaking her out.
Tastes like burning. Okay, so when you say it outside of context, like I didn't know what that meant. I'm still on like.
You ever watch The
Mike
Simpsons?
Mike eating matchsticks.
Do you watch The
that
Simpsons?
That were previously burnt.
Okay.
Yeah, The Simpsons, yes.
Okay, that's where the reference is.
What's that, like the little neighbor kid?
Yeah.
Not Milhouse, the dumb one, the I choose you. Help us out. If you could let
Ralph
us know.
Ralph Wiggum.
Ralph?
Ralph Wiggum.
That's right. Chief Wiggum's son, yeah. That's right.
Little Ralph Wiggum says,
tastes like burning.
And that's what the pizza was.
I like
and it had
that.
Jalapenos and it had chipotle peppers. And I think it had red pepper, like probably the red pepper flakes in the sauce.
Hmm.
It was one of those things where you start eating it and you're like, oh, yeah, it's got a little heat to it. This is cool. And you get about halfway through it and you're like, holy shit.
You're dying.
This is going to hurt.
Welcome to the great state of Utah. When Mormon pioneers settled here and proclaimed this is the place in 1847, they weren't kidding. From our majestic mountain ranges, to our numerous national parks, to our plentiful historical landmarks and innovations, to our many outdoor adventures and activities, to our booming economy dedicated to helping businesses large and small, there is something for everyone in this state, including drinking. Now, it's interesting to note that peppered across what is known as the Beehive State are 35 craft beer breweries, about a dozen distilleries, a few vineyards and wineries, and a popular hard cidery. From as far north as Ogden, from as far south as St. George, from as far east as Vernal, and as far west as Tooele, no matter where you live or travel within the state of Utah, you'll be able to quench your thirst with plenty of award-winning beer, spirits, and the like, made locally here in Utah. Here now to school you with their knowledge on Utah's ever-growing, ever-popular, and ever-changing craft beer scene, our sister missionary of beer, Jenny Schaefer, and certified Cicerone, Lauren Lurch, otherwise known as the Crafty Beer Girls, from craftybeergirls.com, as they sit down and have a conversation with Michael Druce, head of the Utah Consumer Coalition.
Do you guys know you have similar shirts on?
Yes,
we know.
Thank
we noticed
you.
That. Yeah, wanted to know why our guest didn't wear his plaid flannel shirt. Just a plain flannel shirt. So boring.
Because I'm a beer industry maverick. See? Clean shaven. No plaid.
We're just the average beer industry gals in our plaid flannel.
Mm.
And then we have Mike the janitor in his dapper sweater.
Yeah.
And what's that? What kind of hat is that?
I don't know. Scottish?
Beret?
Somebody was saying I look like a character out of Peaky Blinders from Netflix.
Right.
Got some razor blades under there.
Yeah. Exactly. Bourgeoisie.
Yeah. So. All right.
Anyway, whenever you're ready, just do your...
Well, thanks for being here, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Are we going to do the introduction thing that we do?
Sure.
The welcome to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast.
Why do you have to ask?
Yes,
you know how this
the
works.
Welcome to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast.
But I forgot. It's been a little while.
Welcome to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast.
Thanks, Lauren.
I'm Lauren Lurch.
I'm Jenny Schaefer. Mm. And you know who we are, so we won't have to say that.
Mike Millen's here.
Hi.
We got Mike Millen.
He's
Mike
the reason
the janitor.
You hear us.
That's right.
And we have a special guest tonight. We have Michael Druce from, he's the director of the Utah Consumer Coalition. Thank you so much for being here, Mike.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, ladies.
We have two mics. Do we call you both Mike?
More mics, the better.
Yeah, that's true. That's a real party now. Yeah.
Do I say Michael and Mike?
Just call
him Mike. Let's just say Mike, and then whoever wants to answer,
I'm
you know?
Just here in the background.
Whoever
don't worry
feels
about
like
me.
It's directed at
all
them.
Right.
He's the guest. Don't worry about me.
So we're pretty excited about this Utah Consumer Coalition. And if you haven't heard about it before, we're going to tell you all about it. The reason we wanted to do this now is because the legislative session is about to start here in Utah. And who knows what could happen during that. But the Utah Consumer Coalition is aiming to change alcohol laws in Utah. Is that right?
Beer laws.
Or beer
in
laws.
Particular.
Right.
And Utah Consumer Coalition, we formed in 2019. We are a Utah 501c4 corporation. And the sole purpose is to get better beer laws in the state of Utah.
That sounds like a good thing. And actually, we should have some beer.
Speaking of beer.
Yeah, we should have some beer.
Oh, boy.
We shan't do this.
This is a beer podcast.
Sounds the beverage we are speaking of.
So I got this Galaxy Juice from Turo. I think it's one of their latest beers. And I'm assuming it's a juicy. Oh.
Yeah, hook it up.
I just poured myself a lot of foam.
Whoa.
But I'm going to pass this around so everyone can get a little bit. We'll actually drink some beer on this podcast.
Yeah. That's right. You know how to do it.
Evidently, we can't pour any beer without it being on the microphone or it's like we can't drink it or something.
If you can't hear it being poured, did it even pour?
That's a good point.
I guess I'm the only one that can make sound.
Did you save
it.
Some for him?
I did.
Oh, good, good.
We serve our guests last.
I know. I don't know what I was doing.
That was a dick move.
I know, that was rude.
Hey, take it all. Yeah. Drink from the bottle.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you and cheers.
Didn't
use the silent coaster.
Like it matters.
I know. I like moved it so I could put it on the silent coaster.
This smells good. I like it.
I'm sure it's got Galaxy hops in it. I think that's why they call it Galaxy Juice. So we want to, let's see, how strong is this beer? 7%. So wouldn't it be cool if we could have this beer on draft and not out of a bottle?
Yeah.
I think it would be cool. So isn't that what the goal of the Utah Consumer Coalition is, to try to get full-strength beer here in Utah on draft?
Yeah, it is, and for a couple of reasons, Jenny. The, you know, just the whole concept of having the choice of how much beer I want to drink, and at one particular time, it just so happens you poured this beer out of a 12-ounce bottle.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case. It could be an Imperial Stout served in a 22-ounce package, and sometimes you sit down for dinner, you're going to have a nice steak dinner, what have you, and you want an Imperial Stout, but you don't want 22 ounces of Imperial Stout. You want 10 ounces, 12 ounces, something along that line. But just to have the choice of drinking less would be nice. And that's a concept that's somewhat alien in Utah,
yeah.
Specifically with our lawmakers, that someone would actually opt to choose to drink less if given the choice.
Yeah.
And that's one of the concepts that we have in getting heavy beer on draft.
Well, do you think people really would? I mean, I know I would. I mean, especially if it's a 22-ounce bottle. But we're like kind of craft beer nerds. And I'm just curious whether that's like, what about you guys? Mike, the janitor, would you, if you had the option to have less than a 12-ounce pour, would you want that?
I would want the availability than having to buy a packaged product.
Sure.
I think it's a good idea, personally.
Yeah.
And I think you have to qualify that question with a ABV amount. Because
right.
if it's an Imperial Stout, it's likely a 10% or higher.
Sure.
So if we were talking about double IPAs, 8%
sure.
and higher.
That's
Imperial
a great point.
Stouts, right? That those are big beers. And, you know, you don't necessarily need 22 ounces of a big beer in a single setting. So there's the consumer, version of that choice that's being made, but there's also the retail establishment that's serving that beer.
True.
That from a purpose of control, smaller pours sometimes may be better.
Yeah.
And you honestly just don't need a 16-ounce Imperial Stout. If you get outside of the state of Utah, as I'm sure you all have at some point in time, ordered a big beer, it's not uncommon for that beer to come into a 12-ounce pour, no questions asked.
Yeah.
That's how it comes. If you want another one, you're certainly welcome to order
sure.
one, but it will be served in a 10 to 12-ounce.
Is that what you found, Lauren, when you've been out of state?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. There's a place that I like to stop in every time I go home. And it's right over the bridge from Pennsylvania. It's in New Jersey. And it's got a bunch of bottles to go, but it's also a bar where you can sit down and have a few beers. And I ordered one, and they brought it out, and it was 3 ounces. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I was like, is this normally how it comes? And, like, the people who were sitting next to me chimed in. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Listen, you don't need more than 3 ounces. Like, I promise you, this is going to be good for you. And it was. I didn't want more than three. It was
yeah.
really, really strong. And I was glad that I didn't get 12 ounces because I probably would have left six of them sitting there.
Sure.
So.
Or you would have felt pressure to drink it, and then you might not feel good, or I don't know.
Well,
I wouldn't feel too good.
Yeah,
feel too good?
You might not like it. And
or you might not like it.
Might be a $15 beer. You know, again, mm-hmm. if you talk about
right.
a Big Bad Baptist, something like that, they don't give that away. It might
sure.
be a $15 bottle, right? So I'd like to try it first. A 3-ounce pour would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That if you go to a brewery and you just want to try stuff, if they have it on draft, you can do that. You can just have a flight or some samples.
Try it there, take it
yeah,
home.
Yeah, and take it home if you like.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
But we don't have that here in Utah, do we? Utah's kind of, we're a little bit different here. We have a prominent religion, and they are the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they don't drink. The Mormons don't. So, and they, you know, pretty much still control a lot of the lawmaking here. They're in all of the places of power and sort of what they think in that culture. I think it's a lot of it's the culture too. It's just a pervasive culture. It's not just the people in power, but you know, more and more there's these beer drinkers like us hanging out here in Utah, and there's all these breweries opening up and distilleries too, and there's quite a culture here. But I think that non-drinking culture still kind of taken over, right?
And you know, on that topic, it's a culture that I'm well aware of. 50% of my family lives in that culture, and you know, I've learned to respect the reasons why they think the way that they do, and I think they have great intentions. And you know, there's plenty of people that have drinking problems, you know, that abuse alcohol, and that's a subject that should always be a concern to everyone when considering amending laws and making things more available and such. But you really need to temper that to some degree, you know, because ultimately in this concept of consumer choice, which we'll talk about as we get further into this, is some people may choose to drink less if you give them the option. Utah has a history of actually over-packaging alcohol, if you look back historically, where, you know, right now the majority of the cocktails that you drink might have a 1-ounce pour. Well,
sure.
It used to be the case that they would force you to drink an ounce and a half because that's how it was served.
Because of the
packaged.
Mini bottles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you start out with great intentions, but, you know, if you take a close look at it, it's like, no, we can actually improve this
yeah,
a little bit.
It sounds good in their heads, but when it comes down to how it's practiced and what the actual effects are of the laws, sometimes it's not.
That's right.
There are unintended consequences
yeah.
that kind of come about yeah. with that.
Some laws can be improved.
Sure.
You know, so
yeah.
you've got great intentions. They're just not working quite right.
So that's what the Utah Consumer Coalition is trying to do, is
yeah.
come up, like, make better laws. I mean, so do you want to tell us how you got... This is meant to represent the people, right? Not necessarily the industry. Is that right? That's why it's called the Consumer
yeah,
Coalition?
Yeah, well, to give a little perspective on that, we formed in the aftermath of SB 132. And I refer to that as the sausage making of beer laws. And
was that last year?
It was last year,
2019.
Yeah, in 2019, and
the infamous
and that was a, you know, specifically a legislative session year,
mm-hmm.
and That was the year that Utah brought 5% beer into grocery store, which by all technicality was a new definition
right.
of beer, and heavy beer is what that was. But what we had was we had big beer threatening to not make 4% ABV or 3.2
right.
ABW by weight in Utah anymore. And so, you know, the big retailers looked at that. That was going to be millions of dollars of losses of revenue. And some big boys jumped in on that deal, Walmart in particular. And they came in with, you know, with both guns firing. And you know, this came to a head. But what resulted in that is you could see the factions. You could see that the Utah Brewers Guild representing breweries felt a certain way. You had the LDS Church feeling a certain way.
Right.
Senators feeling a certain way. The public a certain way. Bars and restaurants. And you have all these different perspectives. By the time that was done, though, I assure you that the faction that was never considered for a second was the consumer.
Yeah,
right?
So exactly.
That really was the point where we looked at that and said, okay, look, we may have a lot of things in common over the course of time, but in this particular instance, everybody was very self-serving and in their purposes, and not for a minute was the consumer considered.
Right, and that's probably what fueled some of the. There was a lot of frustration among beer drinkers, I would say, during that time.
Well, you certainly saw it.
Yeah.
There was a social media aftermath
yeah.
in which the consumers were just beside themselves. And there were a lot of villains in that process.
Sure.
And really, when you see that, what that means is that there's zero empathy. People feel like they're not being heard. When they're not being heard, they get angry.
Yeah.
That happens often in Utah. But in this case, it wasn't just directed to the LDS Church. It was directed to breweries,
yeah.
the Brewers Guild, to a lot of different entities for different reasons.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, just for our listeners, can you define the difference between big beer and heavy beer? Because you said those two things close to one another, and I just want to make sure everybody's on the
yeah.
same page.
Yeah. When I use the term big beer, I'm talking about corporate beer. I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about
okay.
the monster beer makers. These would be the opposite of a small brewer, a hometown brewer. This would be in the likes of a Anheuser-Busch, AB InBev, AKA,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
right.
That's
versus
right.
So, heavy beer.
Yeah, it's just they're imposing entities
right.
Doing billions of dollars of business, and when they want to get their way, they generally do.
Yeah,
right. Versus a small brewery in Salt Lake City, Utah. That you know, was a passionate brewer that just came out
yeah.
of his garage, and now he's you know open, you know hung out a shingle, and he's supporting his family,
yeah.
and you know, and he's got neighbors that have come over to drink out of his establishment. They're just two different interests that have a different
yeah.
view on life. So,
but then also we have this term here called heavy beer,
yeah.
which just means above. Grocery store strength or draft strength.
Yeah, well,
beer.
Here's the good news. According
right.
to a billboard I saw on the interstate, and Budweiser,
okay.
heavy
ooh,
Budweiser's
nice.
Now in Utah, baby.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, heavy Bud. Never
is it
heard
really
of that.
Heavy?
Yeah.
Is it like
heavy.
Super thick?
Yeah.
They had a whole parade for it, didn't they?
Yeah.
They brought
the Clydesdales in.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah. That's a whole nother topic. When,
oh, man.
When the Clydesdales first came to Utah on the Days of 47 parade, this would be back in 1982, 1983, and I was so jazzed up, and I wore my Budweiser sweater and made some Budweiser signs, and I'm walking in the parade, and they're like, dude, if you don't get out of this parade, we're going to cite you for being in the parade without a permit.
Really?
All right, I backed out. Yeah.
That's great.
The last time I advocated for Bud.
This edition of the Crafty Beer Girls podcast was recorded on location at Grinders 13. Serving Utah's best subs since 1973, their fresh ingredients and made-to-order subs will have you coming back for more. Located at 1618 South State Street, you can also find them online at grinders13.com. And now back to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast with your hosts, Jenny Schaefer and Lauren Lurch, as they have a conversation with Michael Druce, head of the Utah Consumer Coalition.
I'm thirsty.
Way to get that on the microphone.
Yeah. Anybody want some Hollahaze from
that's
TF?
Funny. I brought my last one as well.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Did you try this, Mike?
No, I wanted to go during his release because he had the special edition. Do you say a Tiku glass?
Yeah, I don't know how you pronounce that,
I don't
honestly.
Know. I said Tiku.
But no they idea. Sold out, and I never did get my glass, and I'm really bummed about that. But well, yeah, I totally want to try that.
All right, I didn't want our guest to be served last.
Right.
As he was last time.
By the way, I like that quaint 1 ounce glass you're
that
using.
That is nice. What is that? People, it's got a gold top.
People actually do it. She had a choice to bring a 64 ounce mug if she chose.
I only made that mistake once. Yeah. Well, this is my Big Beers Festival glass.
Yeah.
It was their 20th anniversary, so they gave a little gold rim to the top.
Oh, that's nice.
It's like a little snifter.
Cute.
Isn't it cute?
It looks like. Well, the reason we bring taster glasses is because we know we're going to drink, pass around some beers and drink small amounts at a time. And we want to still be able to smell it and kind of get the full experience. If we had a big glass with a little bit in it, the beer would be too far away.
Sure. While we're on the topic of that, we didn't really reflect on Two Rose Galaxy.
I thought it was really good.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Juicy as fuck.
Yeah.
It was
real
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I always like Two Rose hoppy
stuff.
Beers.
I always like when somebody comes out with an F word before I do.
Oh. I got you.
Lauren wins.
I didn't do it.
This Hollahaze is pretty good, too. I'm pretty stoked on that. It might be my favorite of their hazy so far.
She called, though.
Mine was the squirrel, but they're both delicious.
They're all really good.
Yep.
So, let's see.
Michael, do you have a favorite brewery here? I mean, let's talk favorites. Do you have a favorite brewery?
Actually, do not.
Liar!
He can't play favorites. He's gonna be partisan.
Yeah, no,
but
fine.
I do have favorite beers. I'm a double IPA fan, and so that would then for me that's gonna be in a Red Rock and a Two Row category, and then Templin's
Firda
coming right up behind them.
Firda,
so
a little Elefino, a little Firda,
yeah,
and Two Row. What do they have? Feeling Hazy.
That one's really good.
Yeah.
Delicious. They've got a variety.
Random.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Variety of
doubles.
Doubles that could be hazy, maybe not. I get hazed out.
Yeah, I get a little hazed out.
Hazy
definitely.
Boy.
Is that a beer name? It probably should be.
It should be.
Yeah. It might be.
And for the record, there are no double IPAs in Saskatchewan, Canada. I crossed the territory, look for a WIPA. They tried to convince me, sorry, sir, that's a seasonal.
Sorry.
Really? Sorry.
Up in Lagerland.
So sorry.
It turns out they've got a tax structure that makes Utah look reasonable. So,
you're kidding.
So when I found a four-pack of Clown Shoes double IPA, it was $42 Canadian.
Holy really?
Are you sure that's not just like
So you bought it.
So I checked the date.
Oh, no.
And I don't drink 8-month-old double IPAs.
But
it was indeed, when we found him, it was a tour of what a bad IPA tastes like. And it wasn't brewed that way, but it's what an old IPA tastes like, I should say. Yeah.
Them lagers, though. But they were pretty good.
We have the DABC here. And I'm just kind of curious, how come the Utah Consumer Coalition isn't going for abolishing the DABC?
Yeah.
What? Okay. Is that a good idea? Wouldn't that be a good idea? Shouldn't we just abolish the DABC?
Yeah. Well,
or is that dumb?
Yeah.
Are you looking for anarchy?
Is
that kind of a dumb thing to want to do?
Well, first of all, it's another podcast episode.
Right.
It's
yeah. Well, just quickly.
But, it would be reasonable to point out that... I've got a statistic in here, and
love statistics.
Yeah, it's related to privatization, and when you look at markups on beers, right? Mm-hmm. If you were to take the small brewery equivalent markup for the DABC for Utah to that of a private alcohol retailer,
they're
going to be about the same.
Yeah,
there's no big benefit there,
right?
By the way, but that's.
Is that what we're doing? So if we say we want to abolish the DABC, is that what we're doing? Is just saying we want to privatize?
Yeah. Ultimately, that's what you're doing.
So when people just like are arbitrarily angry at the DABC because they feel like that's the thing that is oppressing them and their beer drinking, you know, lifestyle, that they just want to abolish that, you know, get rid of it. Like, we don't like that. Yeah. Is that really the problem, though?
No, I think DABC. Yeah, I think it's pretty subjective if you take a close look at it. I've seen some bad examples of privatization of alcohol.
Sure.
And so, but literally, I can't speak to that other than to say it depends, right? But there are elements of, and it's not the DABC in particular. The DABC enforces laws enacted by the legislature, right?
They're not making the laws or the rules.
Yeah, so you've got laws, and if you don't agree with the laws, it's because somebody made them. The DABC is just simply implementing and executing on those laws, right?
Mm, exactly.
So it's not so much their problem. Although, if we do get to those questions, you'll see that they do also have a point of view.
And
I actually had a meeting back in October with Executive Director Saul of the DABC, for which there are questions surrounding beer, heavy beer, that a lot of people make assumptions about, and I just wanted to go in and ask specifically these questions and find out what they were, such as.
Yeah.
Is it a good time to go down that direction?
Well, I don't know.
What do you think?
Sure. I mean, I thought that was really – you told me about that conversation, and I thought that was really interesting. We were talking about whether or not people would consume less alcohol if given the opportunity, and you – sort of mentioned that he had a reaction to that, just that concept,
and we get on the subject because, you know, if people are angry at DABC, you know, why are they angry? Well, as an example, they don't refrigerate beer, right mm-hmm. So let's take something that has nothing to do with consumption, anything. It's really just taking good care of the product, right? And so so my question to them is, have you considered refrigerating beer, craft beer in particular?
Sure.
And
makes
the,
sense
the answer would be no.
Okay. Not even for a minute. Like,
And the reason is this specifically. Craft beer sales have been increasing year over year over year over year. Why would we spend money to build a refrigeration system that would cost us X millions of dollars if it's already selling well?
Right.
Right?
To sell even more well?
There's no evidence of that. It just continues to sell.
Yeah.
It just sells. So if you look at DABC sales statistics, they climb and they climb and they climb and they climb, right?
And the population grows, so that's probably a lot of it.
That would be my argument. Wouldn't that be based on the population growth?
And that's fine because they have no interest in increasing per capita drinking, although that also increases, by the way. But the fact of the matter is they have zero interest in refrigerating alcohol because sales are already good.
Right.
So there's no incentive for them to do that. Now, Senator Oda, back, you know, when he first proposed a heavy heavy beer on draft, a new distribution law, things along that line.
When was that?
He ran that proposal specifically on a...
That was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, this would be in 2009.
Okay, so
right? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is...
11 years ago?
Yeah,
wow.
This is HB 349. It also included the Heavy Beer Wholesaling Act, which we may also get to. But his premise, the audio recording related to that hearing, is he said, look, they don't have the capacity to take care of this product.
Okay.
You know? And so you talk to any brewer anywhere at any time, refrigeration is key. They don't like to let beer out of their possession that's not refrigerated. Let's say we leave the state of Utah and you go down to San Diego County, Stone Brewing. They refused to have a distributor carry their beer that did not have a refrigerated truck, and they ran into problems. Stone Brewing created their own distribution company, refrigerated trucks. Now they're distributing, you know, 30 other craft beer brands.
It's that important.
Because they take care of the beer, right?
Smart.
Now, we're talking about these double IPA hazies and whether or not, you know, they're shelf stable. Well, they're actually not. I'm not going to name any names, but there's certain products. When they get on the shelf at DABC, they sit 30 days in the warehouse, get on the shelf at the retail store. They just don't taste the same, right? They're a little darker, a little wackier, and I will buy that beer directly at the brewery, but I will not buy it from the DABC. So could they sell more beer if it was refrigerated? Now we're getting into beer nerd stuff.
I mean, they still get the taxes. Yeah. I don't think they care if the brewery sell it or if they sell it.
No.
They don't give a shit.
They have zero care for your product. So, but it's good to know, right?
Yeah.
And so the question is, do they care? No, they don't. They don't. And I offered to build a refrigerated warehouse for them, and I would lease it to them so they would not have to go to the legislature and do that. We'd build it for them. It'd be state of the art. We'd
pack
that sucker full of beer, be as cold as can be. Well, guess what? They won't do that because they're not leasing properties anymore. And now they have in the past, and they still have some that they lease.
But
they're working towards not leasing properties from anyone.
But why?
So we'll actually go. We'll go through a series of these questions, and a lot of them are just simply because.
Just because. Yeah. Like,
no answer.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah. Well, so, and then,
I say that respectfully, by the way.
I don't.
Well, and how much of a problem is the church? Like, do they have a lot of? Is it just the culture in Utah in general? I mean, the DABC is not the church, but I mean, we have a culture here, and they have a lot of power, and they kind of say what they want and what they don't want. I mean, they've come right out and said.
Yeah, well, specifically, you have more than 90% of your lawmakers are members of that faith.
Yeah.
Okay, which is fine also. Jenny, you did point out in your last blog article regarding the UCC.
Yeah, I write about this, by the way.
I pointed you to a video that came directly from a church authority. And
that in the article, too.
That's right. He made it quite clear what their interests are. Now, it will always be.
Yeah.
Underage drinking, overconsumption, impaired driving. Okay, so any amendment you make to any law, you consider those three things first. So,
which you should anyway, though,
yeah.
right?
Well, like honestly, there is no argument there, right?
Yeah.
So you can be mad, you can place a lot of blame with them, but you look at that from a societal benefit. They are definitely on the right track. So let's take what we're talking about with heavy beer in particular, right? Underage drinking will not be impacted whatsoever because it's already sold in the brewery. It's already sold in the bar. It's already sold in the restaurant, but it's packaged. So what's happening is I order that beer. It comes in a bottle. I take that bottle. We pop the cap. We pour that into a glass because that's how I prefer to enjoy it. And that bottle goes into the trash, right? So it's available, and we will approach the waste of packaging ultimately, but there is no impact on underage drinking.
Right.
You cannot step into Lucky 13 without having an ID swipe on the exterior of that building. You do not even get into that building.
Right.
The DABC has plenty of control on licensees and IDing, checking for underage drinkers. There's plenty of rules in place there, right?
Restaurants.
The product is already available. Now, what we do have is an option to drink less, okay? So I bring up the subject to the DABC. The concept that people would actually choose to drink less if given the option.
Yeah, and he was like...
Well,
fuck are you talking about?
Well, first of all, there for a minute I thought, man, maybe I should have been a stand-up comedian.
Did he laugh at you?
Because everything that comes out of my mouth is funny to these guys, I don't get it.
They just... Yeah, so, of course I'm going to drink more if you give me more.
Yeah, so,
I'm an animal.
So when they were done laughing... and I explained myself. Literally, I just went through the conversation that we've already had, that literally there are some times that a beer is so heavy, you just don't want that much of it, right? Referring to Saul, had reflected back to trips he had had in Europe, Imperial Pines, things along that line. But if you're involved in the craft beer culture, you realize that this is a sensory journey for most of us, right? There is a difference between the 30-pack of Bud Light or Keystone and a double IPA, hazy IPA, a Imperial Stout, any type of beer. We like to smell it.
Mm-hmm.
We like to taste it. We like to swirl it. And we like we like to talk about what we're getting. Look, first of all, we just paid $6, $7, $8 for this sucker. We want to justify the purchase. It's interesting. You know, you get these floral smells, you get these citrus smells, you get these bready, smells and tastes, and you're talking about it, right?
Yeah,
so
of course.
That's the experience that we're talking about. We're not there to overconsume. Now, there are people that do, and I understand why those laws exist.
That's
but in
thing.
Craft beer culture, and by the way, you know, when we're talking about expensive beers, which these are, right, there is only one proven way to reduce consumption, and it's price. And they know it. They know it. You know, there's actually statistics that show that if you adjust a price by 10%, it actually impacts consumption of that product, right? So here we are doubling the price of a beer, basically. So you can either get a 30-pack or you can have a couple of beers. What do you want to do, right? So we've literally doubled the price of the... Yeah.
Just kidding.
Sure, that's a good point. That's,
never.
Yeah, and I'm always going to say 30-pack, by the way, because a lot of people don't realize that is one of the top-selling SKUs in retail, is the 30-pack. That is the truth, right? So of all the SKUs in that beer cooler, the 30-pack is one of the top sellers.
Well, I mean...
Come on.
There are... We're talking about beer, not just craft beer, because, I mean, you know, this is something that would apply to all beer. And there are beers, of course... I guess if I start thinking about it, those beers are like 5%. They're in the grocery store. You know, they're already on draft. We're talking about things that are over 5%. And a lot of those are going to be more your craft beers, I would think.
Yeah.
Or what about like...
Well, heck, we have two primary trends in the craft beer industry right now, and it's at the low end and the high end.
Right.
You know, they're calling them fit beers, right? Low-cal beers.
Yeah.
So we're anywhere from fit beers to extreme beers. Is what the craft beer is doing, but it just is evidence that that the craft beer community, it's not into consumption. Consumption's not the objective, right? It's flavors.
For us, yes.
It's
college students,
it's choice.
Maybe
yeah.
not so much.
Mm. Right.
You know,
there
are people who just drink to get drunk.
You're
I mean,
right.
that is very true. I do wonder if those people, you know, are just going to go, okay, what's your highest strength beer? And I want the biggest one I can and, you know,
good.
Just drink it all by myself.
That will be $10, and it's
yeah.
going to be 12
right.
ounces. Do you
exactly.
still want it?
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
No,
good point.
That's
good
the
point.
Choice.
Can I get you the shitty 30-pack here for half the price?
Yeah. And, you know, I'll just bring this up now. It goes a little bit out of order. But when we tested one of our memes, you know, we've got a whole discussion about, you know, essentially we're in phase one for the Consumer Coalition where we were trying to determine, does anybody really care? Right.
Yeah. Does anyone care?
Yeah. So we've been testing messages. I've got an environmental angle, which we haven't even discussed, and that is specifically that if we can eliminate this packaging, I'm going to take millions of bottles and cans out of the waste stream in Utah. Mm. It's just going to happen automatically, right? So we tested some environmental components, some recycled components on Facebook as an example.
Oh, yeah.
But we did create a meme, and it was Keith Stone and the 30-pack.
I saw that.
An Asian lady drinking a 6% stout. You know, with her meal, and one is legal, 30-pack, and the 12-ounce 6% stout illegal.
Right.
Okay.
In a draft.
I can buy 35% beers at one time, or it's illegal to buy one 12-ounce pour of a 6% stout. Okay. Mm. It's absurd.
Yeah.
Anybody. That looks at that knows that it's absurd, right?
Welcome
so,
to you too.
Yeah,
yeah
so,
but a lot of these laws are like kind of like that. Like, they don't really make sense to us.
Right.
What's
but,
the point?
But how about the profile of that? That there literally is a person that wants a 30-pack, right? Well, a guy chimes in. This is social media. It's fun. You got to be careful what time you post those as well. Because the later it gets on Friday and Saturday night, the crazy comes out, right? You know, a couple of people go, dude, if you keep this up, we're going to lose our 30-packs, bro. You know.
Shut up.
Yeah, why don't you keep a lower profile. And
they're going to take him away.
Yeah, but a guy goes, dude, he bought that, and, you know, he went home and drank them. That's the difference. I'm like, no, he didn't. Word on the street. Keith was on his way to a party down the road, you know. He's going to be driving home later, right? This girl was just trying to have dinner with a 12-ounce pour of a 6% stout, you know. There's no harm in that. That complies with an 05 drinking law at that level. Mm-hmm. So we really have to be careful about generalizing. When we talk about consumer freedom, it's like if you give some people the choice to drink less, they will. And if they drink less, inherently you reduce the probability of impaired driving. So we bring this message to the Utah State Legislature, to the LDS Church, to anybody that has a concern, and we say, look, if we've got an idea for a way to decrease consumption, inherently reduce impaired driving, would you be interested in hearing it?
The Crafty Beer Girls invite you to become a part of the Utah Consumer Coalition efforts by visiting their website at utahconsumercoalition.org. This grassroots effort is a nonprofit organization to be the voice and represent Utah consumers when it comes to changing the drinking laws in the state of Utah. Please join their cause by visiting and signing up at utahconsumercoalition.org. And now back to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast with your hosts, Jenny Schaefer and Lauren Lurch, as they continue their conversation with Michael Drews, head of the Utah Consumer Coalition.
And it sounded like, though, you said this DABC guy that you talked to drinks?
They're great people. I think he implied he had a beer in England,
yeah,
somewhere.
Something about an imperial pint.
Yeah. So beyond that, I don't know much about it. But that really is what we were discussing. And by the way, you know, that came up on the concept of currently Utah law allows, and I think this set people back when you talk about it, a lot of people don't realize this is in the law. The current law states that heavy beer, which is a generalization in and of itself, right? Because mm-hmm. now we're talking about anything over and above 5, but what that's between 5-18%.
Yeah, that could be up.
Yeah,
really
so,
high. Yeah.
So the current law allows a retailer to serve me up to 1 liter of heavy beer at a time.
Whoa.
That's a big deal,
yeah.
Right? I don't want that much beer. In fact, ultimately, we may come with a proposal that says, what's an imperial pint? Is that 20 ounces? 22
yes.
ounces imperial pint, right?
It's 20.
Yeah. That may be a heavy beer per serving might be limited to 20 ounces at a time, right? I think that's reasonable.
Yeah.
It's reasonable. And our intent is not to start restricting anything that's in the law. We were just looking for options to drink less if we
right.
could, mm-hmm. to sample things if we could. But if we were in a give and take scenario, I think it would be quite reasonable to say heavy beer
yeah.
poured no more than 20 ounces.
I mean,
something
yeah,
like that, an imperial pint, right?
Sure.
But not a pitcher. You don't set a pitcher of heavy beer in front of a party. Right? I mean, it's possible.
Who brought that?
Yeah. Yeah. Drink.
You, you brought so, a growler of like yeah. 12% barrel aged.
And the fact of the matter is these are concerns of licensees already. If I'm a retailer and I'm serving, I already have a responsibility to keep a close eye on consumption.
Right, not
over consumption, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to give people that responsibility, give them the tools to actually manage that process
yeah.
better.
That's a good point.
Don't give them the ability to drink a liter at a time of heavy beer, of 18% beer, right? It's near impossible to control. So, you know, anything that's in the 10, 11% range, you know, they're going to keep a close eye on you. You know, you're going to
sure.
order one, if you go to order two, depending upon, you know, how you're handling that. But that's responsible.
How happy you
yeah.
seem.
Yeah, that's responsible business. It's socially responsible. And look, you might have a ride home. You know, you might have
yeah.
an Uber.
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
and so everybody just needs to, you know, just be responsible about it at that level. But my point being that you just can't make these generalizations, you
no.
know, that that some if some people, if given the option to drink less, will.
Yeah,
it, make,
I think there's no doubt about that.
Make it legal.
Yeah.
I will not personally, because I'm bona fide tight, I will not spend $15 on a bottle of beer and leave half of it sitting on the table.
Right.
Right.
Not
yeah.
I know. If I ordered like a big Bad Baptist, which is one of our local barrel-aged stouts, and it's 22 ounces, and there was some left in the bottle, I wouldn't leave it. Even if I didn't want to drink anymore.
I've seen Jenny double fist Ella Fino at a bar right before we're about to leave.
Oh,
she's
shit.
Like, oh, no, hold on, wait.
And do shots.
Yeah.
Jenny's a drunk is what we're
no,
trying to say.
No,
so.
That's not even no, I'm being
Jenny.
Painted as a drunk. Come
that's
on.
That's cool. Drunks are cool.
I'm like always the most sober person.
I'd like to make a point, and this probably wouldn't sway anybody, any of the lawmakers, but from a brewer's perspective, going back to the packaging, I understand from a consumer perspective, a package limits the amount that you're allowed to have, be it more than you actually wanted or less, whatever. From a brewer's perspective, I would much rather give somebody something on draft than in a package because it costs money to put things in a package. It takes labor
and of course the cost of the package itself. And then also, if you're serving something on draft, it has a better chance of being a better representation of what the brewer wants you to drink anyway, because it hasn't had as much contact with oxygen, or potential contact with oxygen, which is one of beer's worst enemies.
Every time it's transferred, you know, and changes from one place to another, it has exposure to oxygen.
It has potential for exposure to oxygen.
Or it could,
If so you're putting something in a keg, the chance for exposure is much, much less than it is if you're packaging.
Yeah, and so Lauren speaks to the business perspective, okay? So if you are bottling that product, you're spending somewhere between 60 to 85 cents to bottle and label that product. And it better serve a purpose. You know, I'm going to ship this somewhere. That's the main reason for packaging, right? Here we are in Utah. We're talking about Utah breweries in particular, right? And so if you do that math, we're talking for a brewery, it could be $250,000 annually. If you're a large brewery, it's millions of dollars annually in packaging that could be eliminated. So. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You're not going to eliminate all packaging, okay?
No.
Yeah. So if I've got 10, ten tap handles in my facility, but I might have if I'm the Bayou, what do they have? 300 beers or something like that, right?
You're not going to have 300 tap handles.
Ultimately, what you're going to do is you're going to make the decision that my top sellers are going to go on this tap handle. Whatever my highest volume beers are, those are going to go on this tap. Pardon me, tap handle.
You need something to drink? Yeah.
We're getting excited talking about this subject.
Here, have something to drink.
Or I should breathe, one of the two. Both are good for you.
I've been told that.
But if I have a tap room, if I have a small brewery with a tap room, or I have a brew pub, all of my beers are going to be on tap, have potential to be on tap.
Sure.
So there's actually a difference. So we know we're not going to eliminate all packaging,
right.
But millions of bottles and cans out of the waste stream, why wouldn't you? So if you go through the the elements of recycling, it is reduce.
Oh, so you
reduce, reuse, or recycle.
In
so
that
recycle
order.
Is last.
In that order, in that, right? Reduce first, right? So let's make the effort. Now,
that.
I posed that question to the DABC. When they were done laughing at me, they made it quite clear that nobody in the legislature has any interest in the environmental aspects of my proposal.
Dicks.
Now, I don't know that that's the case. I don't know.
Well,
I haven't heard it firsthand. But I think it's very important. We've tested that in social media, and it represents at least half of the participants in our movement that we have now. And by the way, that tends to be about 50-50 male to female ratio when you get into environmental issues. And then we've also tested things that are just more beer, more sarcastic. Those tend to be 80-20 male to female on beer issues. So there's a segment of society that cares about the environment.
Oh, yeah.
And this is so simple. It's just easy. Because if that package served a purpose, we take Salt Fire Brewing as an example.
They're a good example,
They may have a 60... I'm going to say what I'm going to say. You correct me if I'm wrong. He claims that he had about 60 feet from where that was packaged to where it was served and packaged.
Yeah, they were basically making the beer in the back room, taking it out front and, you know, pouring it into a glass.
That would be absurd.
Yeah,
for me.
I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no reason for the package.
They're using
simply
cans
to comply
now,
with the law.
But I guess it doesn't. Yeah, I guess it doesn't matter. Bottle, can.
You've got labor.
Yeah,
you've
way.
Got machine.
Yeah.
A canning machine's $200,000.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you kidding me?
I don't know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Well, keep thinking what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But, have another drink.
But yeah, sorry. No, I was thinking they don't have glass anymore. Yeah. Like, there's no difference. I mean, both. Are
we'll
a package
have, yeah,
that
there
costs
are
money.
Differences,
yeah.
There are differences, but there's pros and cons to both.
All
and
right.
It doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah, let's take Red Rock Brewing as an example. Are you packaging for yourself? Okay. You've got a vertically integrated brewery, brew house, brew pub system. So you're going to package it to sell it to yourself, to unpackage it,
right.
To pour it in your customer's
It doesn't make sense
glass.
To do
yeah.
that.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
we're talking about.
It's like wrapping your own Christmas presents.
Why? So we're talking about from a small business perspective. So we're talking about laws that infringe infringe on small businesses. Okay, they needlessly take money from small businesses.
But they're alcohol businesses.
It has nothing to do with reduction of consumption. Sorry. Has nothing to do with underage drinking. Has nothing to do with anything.
No,
it's an infringement. It's a burden.
Yeah,
it's a burden any way you look at it.
And it is because somebody believes that somehow they're going to drink less because it's in a bottle.
All right,
or
let's talk about that
because that's
the assumption, right?
Yeah.
So I asked people one after another, like, why did this law, insist upon packaging right from the get-go?
Yeah. Why?
So I'm entertaining this in my mind. I'm like, well, you know what? If you package it, you can palletize it. If you palletize it, you can stack it. Right. It's just simple to handle, but people assume that it was consumption, right? So I posed the question to the DABC.
Okay.
In their opinion, if it's packaged, or pardon me, if it's on draft, there's a chance that you would consume more.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm like, well, that's interesting. Furthermore, it's because the retailer of the product is going to push you for another and another and another. Well,
If
it's on draft. Have you ever experienced that?
Well, they treat me different because it's on draft than if it's in a bottle.
Or do they ask, ma'am, would you like another beer?
Well, if your beer is empty, they're always going to probably ask you
Regardless of
whether
it's on draft or in a bottle. That's just good service, right?
Right.
Would you like another one? Yes or no?
It doesn't matter what I'm drinking out of.
Right.
Don't they make more money on the bottles? Or do they make more money
on
draft?
No, more money on draft.
A bar?
It would be on draft.
Oh, really?
Typically.
Because it's cheaper.
But if you brewed that beer and you're vertically integrated and it's a tap room, you absolutely make more money by selling it on draft, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there is not a study on the face of the earth. You go look long and wide like I did. Okay, it's a rabbit hole. It doesn't exist. There's no such study. It does not exist. Draft beer does not increase consumption. Okay, now again, remember, we might be talking about a heavy beer on draft. It might be an imperial stout. It gets poured in a 10 or 12 ounce glass. That is not going to increase consumption. In fact, you might sip it slower. You know, either way, it's going in a glass, right? Like, is anybody going to spend $8 on a beer and drink it out of a freaking bottle?
I mean, the only time I feel
Jenny's done it. I've seen her. Yeah.
The only time I feel like I drink more when it's on draft is if there's pitchers and people keep, like, oh, hurry. Like,
have another one. Get rid of this thing.
Let's get rid of this one. And then they pour more, and you don't realize how many you've had
because you never
empty it.
Yeah, it's the same concept of the bomber, you know? It's like if you insist on selling it in a large package, they're going to drink it. They're not going to let it go to waste, you know?
Right.
To learn more about the Crafty Beer Girls, visit them online at craftybeergirls.com and follow them on social media like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. To address your questions, comments, or concerns, or inquire about how to be a part of future episodes of the Crafty Beer Girls podcast, please write to craftybeergirlsblog@gmail.com. And now back to the Crafty Beer Girls podcast as they continue their conversation with the head of the Utah Consumer Coalition, Michael Drews.
So I visited Shades Brewing this week, and they have a brand new Kvike beer called Cherry Pie. So I'm kind of curious about that.
They are really going crazy on this Kvike yeast. They're doing all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah, and it's in a can now, too. The last time I had this was in a bottle. Well, it wasn't this, but the last Kvike beer I had was in a bottle. No, they got cans.
Did I detect a little snarkiness there?
No.
Well, that's a nice color. Look at that.
Lauren, you can't have any.
Why?
I can do whatever I want.
She can drink from the
can.
Try that. Thank you.
Guys, Bell's has these Valentine things that you can get, and I'm really excited about it.
You ready for this? Who does?
Bell's.
Who?
Is that a
Bell's?
Brewery?
Bell's Brewery in Michigan. Okay, yeah. They do these beer-entines. And I think it's really stupid and cute.
I like that name.
I'll have a beerentine.
I've been trying to figure out how to buy it. I don't.
Damn, that does taste like cherry pie.
Somehow it does.
So this beer has cherries, vanilla, cinnamon, graham crackers, and lactose.
Holy shit!
And they did it.
Man, they cannot go wrong with their beers lately. I'm sorry, that's just delicious.
They did a peach pie, I think, in the summertime, and it was pretty good. I think they did a berry pie, too. I don't know if I had that one. But this is new. This is a new type of pie, Kvike beer. It's like kind of sour. And
wow.
So remember we had the Thai Tom Kha.
Yeah. Wow.
They do some interesting things. It turns what you think beer should taste like into something else.
You get the cherry immediately, and then the graham cracker. Like, wow.
And I'm so happy to have a 3-ounce sample of it.
I know, right? I don't think this is too strong.
Nice tie-in. Way to go, Michael.
So, yeah, we've been talking a lot about all the bullshit that we deal with here. And
it's fascinating.
It's fascinating. It's annoying. It's a lot of things. But I just really want to know, what can we do about it? Like, how can we make something change? Like, how can we really do this? What is the plan?
You know, the best way to look at this is, first of all, to understand that we're not just trying to change a law. We're trying to invent a new way for Utah to dispense beer, serve beer, tax beer, distribute beer. So it's got a lot of moving parts. If we contrast that to SB 132, you're trying to redefine the definition of beer and heavy beer, right? That they're
right.
Monumentally different tasks. So this is not going to move fast. But what we're looking for here in 2020 is we're developing a business plan to deliver to the legislature that demonstrates here's how it can be done. Okay, so that means we need to demonstrate empathy to all of the involved parties, key players, which could include senators, DABC, breweries, distributors, bars and restaurants. We definitely have to understand the taxation component of this. So a lot of people don't realize that the tax structure for beer in Utah, as an example, is by the barrel initially, right? Same with federal taxes. So you've got this 31-gallon barrel tax rate that they have for the state of Utah. SB 132 actually pulled a tax increase on a per barrel basis, right?
That was this last one, right?
Yeah, that's part of this give and take that you always have with the state. So it goes from, right now we're at $3.10 a barrel, and they estimate that would generate up to about $350,000 annually, which is a substantial number. So, but what was that? So it's a 30 cent increase per barrel. $350,000, that's going to go to alcohol enforcement. The key being that $350,000 is a pretty substantial amount, right? Okay, so we've got all these people to work with, because it's going to impact a lot of different people. So we need a business plan to make that happen. As an example, we proposed to the DABC we can build a cold room for them. They're not interested, but that was kind of a facetious question, because we already know that distributors exist. So did Senator Oda in 2009 when he proposed the first bill. They have cold rooms ready and waiting for half barrels and sixth barrels. They're just waiting for the beer, right?
Sure.
So there's going to be a change in distribution. Okay, there's going to be a change in packaging. So when we propose this to the DABC that, hey, can you handle half barrels, six barrels? Well, first of all, I know you can't store them warm, right? Warm half barrel, you're going to sell about a third of that beer, because the rest of it's coming out in foam, right? Right. So, so we sent it to a distributor, and it really comes down now to the argument of, well, we don't have control of the beer. So what does control mean? You know, you're a controlled state. Does control mean I have physical possession of the beer at all times?
Yeah.
Right? And actually, they do think that way. That's actually the way they're thinking. See, in my mind, and you look at other states that are controlled states, but what you control the license, who gets the license, what you can do with the license, what your obligations are with the license, how many licenses you can have, that's control, right?
Right.
That's ultimately
control. Not actually
control.
Having it themselves and selling it
themselves. Yeah, so we have this conversation, and it's like, well you know, we're going to send this beer over to the distributors. Like, well, wait a minute. You know, we don't have control of it. Well,
it's out of my sight.
So let me ask you this question. So let's say a heavy beer comes in from Oregon. What's its first stop?
The distributor?
That's correct. It goes from the distributor then to the DABC.
Right.
What? Oh, so you mean somebody else had it first?
They had it first. They were
sloppy seconds.
They controlled it for a moment. So it's not improbable to say that they could have control of the half barrel and the sixth barrel because they already control the beer coming in the state of Utah, right?
Sure.
But it's funny how that kind of twisted people's heads for a minute. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. You're right. Okay, so they can handle it, and what this really comes down to is a distrust of handling of beer for taxation purposes.
So they're afraid that it's going to get, like, they're not going to get all their taxes.
We want to know where it's at because we don't get the taxes if we don't know what's there, when it's there, you know, all of that, right? Well,
yeah.
I could solve that problem. I'll develop a software program. We'll scan that beer in. The moment it hits the distributor, we'll integrate it with your IT system. You know, it'll ding.
Put a little GPS on it.
Yeah. We offer. We'll get the distributors to pay for it, right? Well, we can't because that's illegal. It's another reason why it's a no, okay?
What's illegal?
Us paying for a software system that would actually let them know the moment that drops.
They have to be the ones to develop it or it's illegal?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And do consider right now they're working on an app so that you can know where alcohol is at any point in time.
That's good.
Cost of $175,000, right?
I wonder why they did that.
Might be the most expensive app ever made. But anyway, they did it for you.
I mean, since they already like.
I digress. Okay. I digress. So the plan is making a business plan. Now, you have to discern the small brewer from the large brewer because this is going to impact businesses in different ways. It's up for them to decide. You have. Now, if I eliminate this packaging and if we eliminate 60 to 80 cents per bottle, you know what? We might find some more tax for the state because we just eliminated a ton of packaging.
Sure.
Now we're going to put it in this half barrel. And you know what? Maybe as an industry, we choose to run a underage drinking prevention campaign. Right now, the state of Utah is spending about $2.5 million, about 4% of that allocated budget in that category. Well, maybe we do that. And maybe we choose to take some of our packaging money and offer some benefits or some alternatives to the state of Utah. So what I'm talking about is let's think out of the box. Let's come up with, we're inventing a new way to distribute beer, package beer, get everybody to think about it in a different way, right?
But won't they want control over the marketing of the underage drinking commercials?
If Crafty Beer Girls decides tomorrow to allocate X amount of money to a campaign, it's your right to do so.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, it's called free speech.
You don't have to cede control. but look, the state will take partners. I mean, honestly, if you approach these people, this is the main thing, is if you approach it respectfully, okay, which people don't necessarily do with alcohol laws. You know, they love to bash the church. They love to bash the Senate. But we're partners in this deal. Like, let's cooperate and find a solution.
We don't have a choice.
But it's all right because if we take the three pillars that are important,
we want the same things, right?
Underage drinking, overconsumption, impaired driving, we all want the same things. So we're working together on that trajectory, right?
Sure.
And we're just taking the plan and we're saying this is the way that we're going to accomplish this. And we've got interest of distributors. Well, distributors make money, right? They're one of three tiers of beer, right? You produce it, you distribute it, you retail it, right? So they're going to make more money. But you start pulling things out of the DABC. We don't know what percentage of DABC's revenue is being sold to bars, restaurants. You know, you've got some bars, restaurants, they'll just pull up to a liquor store, buy beer, load it up in the back of their truck, right? So we actually don't know what this impact's going to be. It's not going to be all beer. I've got X number of tap handles. So literally, you differentiate the small brewery, the integrated brewery, that I'm going to brew it and I'm going to sell it right out of my tap house, right? For them, it's just an absolute win any way you look at it. But we put together this business plan for them. We show this is the way that it's going to work. And you've got, where we're at right now with marijuana as an example, right? It's like, boom, you pass the law, and all of a sudden they try and invent a way to make it happen. And you bungle it, right?
Right.
No, we're finding a best case. We're inventing a solution in advance, and we're bringing in partners and coalitions to say, yeah, this thing could work. And so what I'm saying is this, is that you already have the warehouse. You've got the cold warehouse. Brewers already have the ability to put into half barrels, six barrels, right? Retailers already have the ability to dispense by draft. The product's already being sold in the retailer. This is different than grocery. Grocery wanted something they didn't have. This is already in the bar. It's already in the restaurant.
Right.
We just want to eliminate the packaging. All the pieces are in place. We just have to make this thing happen in a coalition factor and show them how this can work. If there's displaced revenue for the state of Utah, used to be school lunches, but I understand they just made a transition. You know, it's almost like maybe they have too much for school lunch right
where
now.
Where the revenue's going.
Yeah, where the revenue's going.
Because all of the alcohol
yeah,
tax.
My understanding is there's a reallocation now, you know, and I'm not sure the reason why prior to this podcast, but there's a reallocation because maybe they've got enough money. I'm not sure. But what I'm saying is we don't want to take anything from the state. If,
right.
if there's tax revenue and you're like backing things
we're
out.
We're not trying to take like yeah. school lunches from kids.
We might even find some tax for the state of Utah. We might even find some revenue for the state of Utah for campaigns related to overconsumption, health issues, things
underage
along that
drinking.
Line. Yeah, and not only can we do that, but we can also save the small business money. So if there's $250,000 to be saved, X amount goes to the state. We make up for the taxation for anything being pulled out of the DABC. DABC gets a markup any way you look at it, right? The markup is currently on a per case basis. But we have to retranslate that now to the half barrel, right?
Oh,
so there's
right.
a markup as to the half barrel. So in the end, the consumer's not going to pay less money, right?
Or more money,
right? There's going to be a reallocation of what's saved
sure.
in there
so
somewhere.
So instead of the money going towards a glass or a can...
That's
a bottle
correct.
Or a can.
Right. So let me add to my proposal. When I come to you and say, hey, if we've got an idea to reduce consumption, to reduce impaired driving inherently, and generate more tax revenue for programs that might reduce consumption, that might be applied to addictive health behaviors or something like that, would you be interested in talking about that? Because that's exactly what we have on the table. We just have to figure it out. We have to develop it. We have to propose it, right? So this is not an angry abolish the DABC message. We are inventing a new way to package, distribute, to sell, to tax heavy beer, and it's exciting. We're actually improving a law.
It sounds
we're
so
not
reasonable.
Trying to abolish. It's so reasonable. It can be done. Now, it's important. We're missing a lot of details out of this conversation. The important thing to leave people with is this can get done.
Really?
This is reasonable. It can be done because there's so many benefits to it, not to mention taking millions of bottles of cans out of the waste stream annually.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go down a list of benefits to this change that we're trying to make, and there is no downside. Everything else, SB 132, grocery stores. Wow, kids are going to have, you know, access to higher percentage beer. No, not in this case.
Not,
it's already being served in the bar and the restaurant.
So what you're saying is what we already did last year is not as... This doesn't have the same effects that something like that would have.
It's entirely
different. You're talking
about
raising the limit for grocery stores. Yeah, kids going to grocery stores. It's maybe they could like shoplift some beer.
It's
or something
a porous
like
environment.
That.
They grab
sure.
a six pack, run out, right?
Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, kids don't walk in, order a double IPA and a 12 ounce glass
and
run
take
out
off
the front door.
With
it doesn't
glass.
Happen. Doesn't happen.
Doesn't it? I've never seen it. But yeah, what you're saying is like this: if you show them what you're actually trying to do, it doesn't give kids any more access than they have. It all it does is change. The way you're drinking the beer.
Yeah, I'm just going to call that one neutral.
Yeah.
Underage drinking mm-hmm. is just neutral in this proposal. But what is possible? And we have to think in terms of what's possible. It's possible that someone may drink less. Inherently, if they drink less, there's a less potential for impaired driving,
yes.
right? That in and of itself is worth trying.
Yeah,
right?
Why not?
Because you can't fail at it, right?
What they think is true and people actually drink more.
If it was true, it would be known.
Yeah.
Because draft beer has been poured. Beer has been poured on draft for hundreds of years. If it was true, it would be known. It is not true. It's untrue. And if somebody wants to study it, they should. Now, you have to be careful. You've got Representative Hawks, right? In SB 132, he has a slideshow. fear the beer. Okay. It's
I'm so scared.
Is there a t-shirt?
Yeah, there shouldn't be. Let's see. What was the
Fear the beer. This is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
A slideshow called Fear the. This is like something they show in high school.
This is one of the legislators in Utah had a slideshow about Fear the beer.
It's part of the DARE program.
Is this
and
say no to beer.
Yeah. Oh. I wished I had it in my notes because there's actually, you know, a tagline to it, just about how dangerous beer is, and it's not. It's not. It's not at all. It's not. And there are things that are more dangerous than beer. And,
a lot of things that are more dangerous than beer.
But the fact of the matter is all of this stuff comes up. I want to front load this sucker with so many benefits and so much potential for, you know, in consideration and with empathy to the LDS church and with our culture, you know, we're not butting heads in any way, shape, or form on this issue. It can actually be improved, not to mention the environment, right? Yeah. So it's a giant conversation with a ton of moving parts. And so people look at it and they go, you know, where's that thing at today? And ultimately, that's your question, right? And we went from the phase, does anybody really care?
Yeah.
And yes,
people care.
Yeah, and people do care. And so, okay. We care. Now how are we going to go about it, right?
Go on Facebook and complain.
Yeah. So now.
So no. What can we do, Mike?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, what can we do? Yeah. I'm listening to this. I'm fascinated. What do you do? How do I help you?
Here's the main important component for the coalition, and that is we have power in numbers. UtahConsumerCoalition.org. Okay. UtahConsumerCoalition.org, and it's there's a difference. There's Facebook groups where people go on and complain. Abolish the DABC. 5,000 followers. You go on there. You talk about what you don't like. Right. We want people to come and drop an email and say, "I will advocate on behalf of this issue." That gives us the power. Now, of the people that we have now, it's over 2,000 people now. There is a certain percentage of those people that say, "I will actually do something. You let me know what to do." Now, we haven't even gotten to that level yet where we're not approaching restaurants. We're not approaching bars. We're not approaching breweries. We're trying to build a coalition of consumers. These were the people that are left out. Now, we will, in 2020, the Utah Restaurant Association is a important issue to them. So we will cooperate with them to get the message out to their members, restaurants. This is a big component of the hospitality business, right?
Oh,
and so we will actually start building a coalition of people that are interested in supporting this cause. So this is consumer driven, but to the degree that our interests intersect with restaurants, with bars, with breweries, we will work together. It's okay to have an opinion that is different than what ours is.
Sure.
So if you have a business model as a brewery that this just in some way doesn't quite work for you, we're not going to call you out. We're not going to be angry. We're not going to boycott, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, which is also could be a whole nother podcast because because people do that.
Yeah.
So, no, this is something that is actually great for Utah. It's great for Utah. It's great for consumers, restaurants, bars, breweries. It's going to be interesting. You'd think that it would be the perfect thing for all breweries, but it's not necessarily. It's a slam dunk for small breweries. But if you even look at the small movement of 4% ABV to 5% for breweries, it impacts cost structure, impacts distribution, impacts a lot of things. So, you know, if you've got a 4% ABV beer that's winning gold medals year over year, do you want to touch that recipe? Maybe not. But you might have pressure from distributors that say, but we don't want to sell it if
Indeed.
It's not 5% ABV or something like that. So there's a lot of interest, a lot of moving parts happening here. And our point is that, as Kathy Stevenson of the Salt Lake Tribune pointed out, we are not looking for angry people. We're looking at people that are reasonable, looking for a solution, willing to contribute. Now, what we do know on social media, all of us in this group know as a fact that people love to hit and run. They love to complain and bitch and all of that. But not a lot of people aren't willing to step up and do something about it, right? It's that time. If you care, this is a sliver of an issue, heavy beer on draft, right? This is not a monster issue.
It's pretty focused.
But if you care about it, if you're in the craft beer community, if you care about this, if you're in the restaurant, hospitality community, get on board. This is a thing, and it can work. It's reasonable. There's a pathway. We're going to create the plan of 2020. We're going to make this thing happen for Utah. This is for the next generation of beer drinkers, folks. This is it. It's a legacy project.
So okay, I go to UtahConsumerCoalition.org, and I sign up to participate. What is your action plan? I want to contribute my time. What can I expect from you and people participating in this program to excel in what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike. So in 2020, and that would be the difference from our test phase of which we were in 2019, does anybody care? We're actually getting to the point of trying to implement, give people jobs things that we can accomplish. So this comes down to thinking at one level, because we're talking business plans. So at my level, we are coordinating with other interests to understand how would this impact your business as a distributor? How would this impact your business as a restaurant? Trying to understand that so that we have a cohesive, well-rounded, well-thought-out implementation for how this could happen. Now, from a consumer perspective, the gatekeepers for alcohol live north of Salt Lake City, right? There are plenty of people in the legislature and in the House, but there are people that hold the keys to these issues, and we need to make sure that we have people that can communicate with them that this is an issue that they care about.
Are you talking about the church?
No.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Senators.
Senators, yeah. Like the Capitol Hill.
Yes.
Basically,
yeah.
Okay.
And, you have constituents within your district, and
right.
They might mean more to you than, say, a business in Salt Lake
City. So we need to talk to our,
as an example.
Like, representatives and things like that.
And that's a message that we need to develop, and there is going to be a hierarchy. So, you can bring an alcohol-related issue to a legislative session, but it may go nowhere if you don't go through the appropriate channels, and
right.
We're well aware of that, and I'm watching it right now. I'm watching things that happen, and, the strange thing about politics is some things can be a non-starter.
Yeah.
That'd be the best idea in the world, but you have to be patient. You have to get through the right people. Lobbyists play a role.
We
do not employ a lobbyist. This is consumer driven. There may come a time that we might cooperate and ask for the help of a lobbyist.
Sure.
And it might be, as an example, the Utah Restaurant Association employs their own lobbyist. Some breweries employ their own lobbyists. The Utah Brewers Guild has their own lobbying interest. So literally, as you build coalitions, What we're bringing to the table are consumers. And you know what? Any movement in Utah has never had that before. So if the Utah Brewers Guild, as an example, had an issue that they wanted to bring to the legislature, there's a difference between X number of breweries, which is a thing.
Yeah.
But when you bring along 5,000 consumers along with it in some organized fashion, it brings does this sound kind of looks like a Bernie Sanders movement of some?
It's grassroots,
man. Grassroots, So honestly, consumer voices matter at some level. They don't matter on their own, as we all know, right? You can, an entire community can feel a certain way. The taxation issue that we were just discussing, before, that there was an initiative, it got ramped up, 150,000 people went on board, and it appears Governor Herbert's going to repeal that tax bill, right? Consumers have a voice. And the latest complaint is last year on initiatives. It's like, why would we have an initiative?
What do we bother? Because they just change them.
It's just going to get deconstructed.
Right.
So, there's a place and a time, and it's a new point of leverage, of voice. It's community voice, and so what we're going to focus on are
the
consumers.
It's a long game, right?
We're going to focus with the consumers, and we're going to work with people that have their interest as well. And when you bring coalition to government, and it's reasonable, and it's positive.
Sure.
You can absolutely make change.
You have a positive message. Yeah. You're not just yelling and
that's what we're
screaming
do.
And I'm angry.
Yeah. Angry people need not apply at all. we have no interest in insulting anybody, in particular our dominant religious faith and culture.
We want to work with them.
We have common interest. We have common interest.
Do you foresee that actually happening on a level where you're actually going to speak with church representatives?
That's right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
Absolutely.
So have you spoken to the executive director then of the Utah Brewers Guild to make them a part of this as well, as kind of like go full force with, you know, another group of people that can help bring even more people into this situation to kind of fight this?
Yeah, I do believe the Utah Brewers Guild's an ally, and I did give Nicole, executive director, an update this last week as to where we are. And we are fully aware that there are multiple interests within that guild, and that's her job, is to deal with those interests. But I think we have a lot of things in common with the majority of her members, and I think we will find ways to work together in 2020. Absolutely. I will see her up on the Hill in this session of 2020, no doubt about it.
I wonder if there'll be anything this year, like alcohol related.
Well, we do. You know, we've got wine by delivery happening.
Oh,
have you seen
what?
That
I heard
one?
About
no.
that.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wine of the Month Club.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody's got a plan that it's Wine of the Month Club for the state of Utah, but the catch is it gets sent to DABC and then they DoorDash it to you.
Fuckers. Oh. Never mind, I thought. Wait. Sorry. I totally misunderstood that.
And then they keep it from
DABC. Wait, the DABC is going to DoorDash me.
Yeah, it's DABC DoorDash. It's a new
Shut
service.
Up.
Yeah.
Like, you have to sign for it with your ID.
21 and over, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but the DABC is going to run this? This isn't DoorDash themselves. This is a government-run
DoorDash. Is
DoorDash.
Like a
DoorDash style.
Yeah, DoorDash style. Yeah.
So, but let's name it. Let's come up with a name. D-Dash.
DABC
Dash. Dash or something.
That's so dorky.
Are you listening, DABC?
Yeah, they're fans.
Got ideas for you.
Actually, well, I'll sleep on
it. You can buy it from your app that they're creating right now.
Yeah. So
that would be nice.
Oh, look, my wine is six doors away.
It's almost here.
It's like Amazon.
They could just have drones. Like,
hey,
DABC drones.
It's a step in the right direction, man, if it's not enough.
So that's a real thing.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes, because it's coming through an unconventional channel, but I think it's an interesting idea. And we're only like one of four or five states that you can't get Wine of the Month Club deliveries. So.
Well, we can't get anything delivered to us. I mean, would that affect...
Jenny, we can get things delivered to
us. I just mean alcohol. Like, we can't order any alcohol out from out of state and have it delivered. So
true.
If you want to order
ways around that.
Well, not what? Really. Sorry. I mean, if you want to say like the advent calendar of whiskey.
Sure, right, yeah. That's
and
true.
They have those online. Yep. Can you get one in state?
No.
Does the DABC carry those? No. Does Costco have one? No.
No.
So no, like Costco's normally have a beer advent calendar for Christmas time.
Yeah, and it's
not
awful,
in Utah,
by the way.
Well,
Costco,
still.
I'm calling you out.
Uh-oh.
There's plenty of things that people would love to see. I'm here to speak to what's doable.
Yeah.
That's heavy beer on draft.
And this
is
what you
doable.
Think, that's what you think is doable as opposed to anything else.
Right.
And that's why you've chosen that particular issue.
That's correct. I'm telling you, within the brewery community, there can be pushback saying, no, man, if you're going to go for it, you got to go whole hog, right?
This may be the only
this
chance.
This got to be big. And I'm like... That's not how Utah works.
No,
that's not how it works.
It's like small increments of progress, and like the two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. I mean, it sucks, but that's reality, right?
Yeah.
You kind of have to find that common ground, figure out what you can actually agree on, and go for it.
Have any of you went out of state and bought purchased liquor that was more expensive than the price in Utah?
Oh yeah,
happens to me all the time, right?
Yeah.
So, am I interested in paying more? No.
Hell no.
Okay. That's never happened at Costco, by the way, with me.
No. Costco's usually not known for that.
But if they're in a strip mall and they're a private liquor reseller, 9 times out of 10, it's more than what I pay at the DABC. And I gave you the example, the small brewer price markup versus DABC. It's pretty darn close equivalent.
Yeah.
So
there's
some.
It's actually not always horrible that we
not,
have that.
No. So it can come down to selection.
Yeah, that's my biggest complaint.
In our case, product quality. It's my number one complaint. It's not price. It's they treat our beer like crap.
Yeah,
you know,
they treat it like shit, and they expect us to buy it anyway.
Yeah.
And we do, because we don't have a choice.
Yeah, we have no choice.
So,
and brewers brew this stuff with care, TLC. They put their heart into it.
Amen.
And then they just suck the quality right out of it and don't care. That's no good. I don't like it.
No, that pisses me off.
Can I give you some interesting insight to another side of this that maybe people don't consider?
Do you have some insight?
I do.
Mike the janitor?
I interviewed several months ago at the DABC to work
in
their warehouse.
Oh.
And this is a position that doesn't pay shit.
Okay.
And it's amazing to me. It's a state job. You get benefits day one, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But you're making, I believe they just raised it to $12.16 an hour.
Hmm.
Now,
yikes. Okay.
I work in a very similar environment. I don't make that much more per hour, but it's maybe $5 more per hour doing very similar work.
Okay.
And you got to consider a handful of these people running power equipment, working in this large warehouse, really throwing the button, well, not throwing, but that's a term you use, of tossing boxes of full of liquor that are extremely heavy.
Yeah.
You're doing this day in, day out. You're just picking all of this liquor to go to all of these appointed state-owned stores.
Yeah.
And they're making $12, $13 an hour, which is their budget restriction. So when I was interviewing with the guy that runs the warehouse, who's a super sweet dude, I'm like, why is it you only pay your employees, you know, X amount of dollars? It's just surprising to me. It seems like they should be making $18 an hour, yeah, you know, a livable wage. And he goes, that's what's dictated by, you know,
the legislature.
The legislature.
Yeah, basically.
Which blew my mind, because when you think about the amount of money that the DABC is raking in, which we read in news
more and more all the time.
Every year, it just increases more and more. And that's what frustrates me so much about this. And as we've been talking, I'm like, where is that money going? I know it goes to a general fund. Originally, I thought it went into education. And I've always thought, is there some kind of corruption happening?
Yo, Mike.
Where this money is going.
All right, Mike, here's what we got. Last year, $479 million in sales.
Jesus Christ.
Was a 5.65% increase year over year, which is, appears to be a trend. Wow. $200 million to the general fund, $47 million to the school lunch program, $2.5 million to Parents Empowered, $4.79 million to the SBI.
What's that?
Sounds like the FBI. Quite like it. But it's the alcohol FBI. It's the SBI.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Those are the Sting Boys.
Okay.
And then we've got $26 million. This, separate from all those revenues, when you hear these numbers tossed out, $26 million in sales tax. Okay? So that's the tax on top of the tax. And don't forget, it was taxed by the barrel to begin with. Okay?
Right.
So we've got tax by the barrel. We've got markup. We've got sales tax. There's all kinds of money to pay those people a living wage. It's disrespectful, okay? If I'm Starbucks, if I'm Costco, it's $15 an hour minimum wage at the least.
Yeah.
Benefits, take good care of these people. It's sad and needs to change.
It does, and that's I wanted to bring it up as we're talking about it. Well, I just couldn't wrap my head around that.
And people are like sacrificing their bodies to their work, pretty much, like getting work these hard hours, and it's hard work.
It's physically demanding. It really is hard work.
At least be able to have a nice, somewhat comfortable life, you know, like a house.
I make a point to be as kind to them as I can, because I know that the state's not.
That's true. And I think there was a controversy there for a while, especially at the stores where they were just having a high turnover on staff. And it's unfortunate because a lot of them seem to be very knowledgeable. They're very friendly. And I love going into a state-owned liquor store. I do. It's just I know there's some background going on there that doesn't seem right nor fair, especially as a taxpayer.
That's right.
Who knows? There's taxes on top of taxes on top of taxes.
It needs to change.
It's crazy.
They need a livable wage.
They do.
Fight for the man.
I need some beer.
The Crafty Beer Girls podcast is a feature presentation of Millen Around Studios and was recorded and edited by Mike the Janitor Millen. This episode was recorded on location at Grinders 13, Utah's original sub shop since 1973, at 1618 South State Street. Find them online at grinders13.com. The Crafty Beer Girls podcast is executive produced by Jenny Schaefer, is created and hosted by Jenny Schaefer and Lauren Lurch. Special thanks to our guest, Michael Druce, head of the Utah Consumer Coalition. To learn more information and sign up for their grassroots effort, please visit utahconsumercoalition.org. Should you have any questions, comments, concerns, or would like to be a part of future episodes of the Crafty Beer Girls podcast, please write to craftybeergirlsblog@gmail.com. And as always, please drink responsibly. If you've had one too many, call a cab, call a rideshare, call a friend. Protect yourself and those around you by getting home safely. Thanks so much for listening, and please subscribe, share, and follow. We look forward to entertaining you again on the next edition of the Crafty Beer Girls podcast. Cheers.
Thanks for coming and have a good night. Drive safe. Take care. Bye-bye. Adios. See ya. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. I said, get the fuck out of here!